In the late summer and early fall of 2003, top commanders launched an extraordinary push to improve the performance of the lackluster military intelligence operation in Iraq. "Actionable intelligence is the key to countering the insurgency," General Abizaid said later, looking back at this time. "All of us were looking for actionable intelligence that would lead us to unlock the leadership of the insurgency." He was especially frustrated that good information gathered at the battalion and brigade levels wasn't making it up the chain of command to the division and corps intelligence operations, where it could be brought into an overarching theater understanding of the problem. What was the enemy? How was it organized, peopled, trained, and indoctrinated? What did it want, if anything, besides expelling the U.S. forces? Militaries, like all big organizations, tend to do what they know how to do, rather than what they might need to do differently to address the situation they face. As French counterinsurgency expert Bernard Fall said in a 1964 speech to a U.S. military audience about flaws in the U.S. approach in Vietnam, "Everybody likes to fight the war that he knows best. This is very obvious. But in Vietnam, we fight a war that we don't know best. The sooner this is realized, the better it is going to be." The U.S. mission in Iraq was overwhelmingly made up of regular combat units, rather than smaller, lower-profile special forces troops. And in 2003, most conventional commanders did what they knew how to do: send out large numbers of troops and vehicles on conventional combat missions. "You had to do operations to drive intelligence," said a senior military intelligence official who was in the middle of this drive. In retrospect, he said, "We were not sophisticated or calibrated in our approach. You know the old saying, if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail." In the late summer of 2003, senior U.S. commanders tried to counter the insurgency with indiscriminate cordon and sweep operations that involved detaining thousands of Iraqis. This involved grabbing whole villages because combat soldiers were unable to figure out who was of value and who was not, according to a subsequent investigation of the 4th Infantry Division's operations by the Army Inspector General's office. On top of that, Army commanders failed to ensure they had a system to process thousands of people. At first, prisoners were held on U.S. bases, but by late summer, they were shipped to Abu Ghraib prison to be held by a small unit of demoralized MPs there. By the fall of 2003, this approach would swamp the system and undercut the aim of improving intelligence, because there weren't enough interrogators on hand to detect the genuine adversaries among the thousands of innocent or neutral Iraqis caught up in the sweeps. It is important to bear in mind the lack of a coherent counterinsurgency strategy at the top. Had there been one, commanders likely wouldn't have used such self-defeating tactics. When you're facing a counterinsurgency war, if you get the strategy right, you can get the tactics wrong, and eventually you'll get the tactics right, said retired Army Colonel Robert Killebrew, a veteran of Special Forces in the Vietnam War. If you get the strategy wrong and the tactics right at the start, you can refine the tactics forever, but you still lose the war. That's basically what we did in Vietnam. For the first 20 months or more of the American occupation in Iraq, it was what the U.S. military would do there as well. The insurgency didn't begin with an announcement or a major event. Rather, it was like a change in the weather. In three towns that summer, Hit, Fallujah, and Chaldea, I would hear an Iraqi proverb repeated over and over as the occupation lurched on, violence of all kinds escalated, and more Iraqis were killed, Anthony Shadid later wrote. "The mud is getting wetter," people said. Things are getting worse, it meant. As the Iraqi mud moistened, the American gloves were removed. The U.S. military escalation occurred consciously. On August 4, 2003, U.S. authorities reopened the prison west of Baghdad called Abu Ghraib, which was notorious since it had been used to punish the enemies of Saddam Hussein. And at around 2 o'clock on the morning of August 14, Captain William Ponce, an officer in the Human Intelligence Effects Coordination Cell at Sanchez's headquarters, sent out a memo to subordinate commands. "The gloves are coming off regarding these detainees," he told them. His email, and the responses it provoked from members of the Army intelligence community across Iraq, are sadly illuminating about the mindset of the U.S. military during this period. They suggest that the U.S. military was moving in the direction of institutionalized abuse. Captain Ponce stated that Colonel Steve Bolts, the second highest-ranking military intelligence officer in Iraq, has made it clear that we want these individuals broken. Intelligence jargon for getting someone to abandon his cover and relate the truth as he knows it. Ponce then went on to wave the bloody shirt, a move that would raise eyebrows among some of his email recipients. Casualties are mounting, and we need to start gathering info to help protect our fellow soldiers from any further attacks, he wrote. So, Ponce ordered them, provide interrogation techniques wish list by 17 August 03.